Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. It has been about 3 months, I think, since our last episode, but this is episode number 273, and I am your host, Sean Hayes. We are back, folks. We are back live in my new space. During our quest log segment, well, I'm going to talk about what has been going on and why there's been sort of a 3 month break and what we've got, you know, coming up in the future. We got a couple things, going on, in the news. Our deep dive is going to, be talking about the 1D&D play test, and sort of what is 1D&D, as far as what Wizards of the Coast is saying, what it is, what it isn't, and just taking a look at some of the design decisions and how they're coming about, what they're doing with that. And then, of course, you know, our quick fire news. We've got a couple things that might not be, you know, super, super up to date. There may be a couple things that you went, this was like a, you know, this was like a week ago or 2 weeks ago or something. It's fine. You know, as far as like concrete evidence of things, even here in October, there's still like not a whole lot of really big, big earth shattering news coming out. Aside from a couple things here and there that I do have in the news. So, with that said, why don't we get right into it, shall we? So, let us kick things off with our first quick fire news in the 3 months or whatever that I took off. So first up, it would not be an 8-Bit Adventures podcast of late without some news regarding Activision Blizzard. Francis Townsend steps down from a role as chief compliance officer to become an advisor to the board and to Bobby Kotick specifically. Folks remember Francis Townsend was basically she was an acquisition for the company that questionable origins, you know, for folks who are paying attention to the political sphere, and much derided in her role for a lot of the sort of ongoing lawsuits and the company's response to said lawsuits. The fact that a chief compliance officer, and I think that was even a step down from where she was before. So basically being sort of completely phased out of the company. I think for the workers, like, this is actually a really good thing. But even better news for the workers, Blizzard Albany, the QA union, was given the clear from the National Labor Relations Board to vote for unionization. There was some shenanigans going on from Activision Blizzard, kind of saying that, those 20 people shouldn't get to decide for the whole company. So we should put it to a vote for the whole company as to whether they get to unionize. And the National Labor Relations Board said, you don't do that. Good on them, you know, and hopefully, you know, my hope is that if the other departments see what sort of progress can be made with the QA unions, is that maybe we get some other unions going as well. And I don't know, like, if you already have existing unions, if they can merge, like if you have separate unions, if they can merge together. Because I don't quite know the various unions, like in Hollywood. I don't know if all the crews fall under one union, or if there's like a gaffers union, as well as like a sound editing union type thing, as well as like, you know, the actors guild, Yeah, I don't know. I know VAs have a union. So I don't know, like, if programming would have its own union and if the art department would have its own union, if they then all wanted to decide to form, like, one big union, if that, like, can't happen or not. But that's neither here nor there. Baby steps are still steps. So good on you, Blizzard Albany. You know, formerly known as Vicarious Visions, definite soft spot for those folks up there, since they're fairly close by. I hope that everything goes well with that vote. And no more interference. So, next up, and this is, again, not the freshest of news, but Google Stadia, their game streaming platform is fully shutting down on January 18th, surprising no one. Google is providing refunds to customers who bought into the platform. So that's sort of an unusual move. But yeah, I mean, if you, for whatever reason, bought games or bought, you know, devices to go with Stadia, you might be entitled to a refund, for that stuff. Cause it is just shutting down completely. You know, it was kind of discussed as to whether Stadia could then be, you know, might become sort of like a, you know, Microsoft or IBM platform where, like, it gets shopped out to other places wanting to do game streaming. And Google's like, no, we can't make this work. It's all going. It's all out. But again, everybody saw this coming. Like, this surprises no one. Like, it's Google. It's, yeah. All right, Disney Dreamlight Valley, since I know there are some fans of this podcast that are big fans of Disney Dreamlight Valley, Halloween season update is live today. The Scar's Kingdom update will feature Scar and several other Disney villains. I think we saw, I don't know if they're already in the game or not, but like Ursula, Mother, oh geez, I don't know how to pronounce her name. Gothel? G-O-E-T-E of it from Rapunzel. I don't know if they ever said her name in the film. Gothel, Goetel, Goetel. Yeah. I don't know. And I don't know how it would be pronounced. Or Gertel. Because I want to say Rapunzel, I can't remember if Rapunzel was originally German or French. So I don't know what sort of linguistic history that name draws from. But anyway, they're in the game. That's live now, sort of their Halloween, sort of scary, spooky season. So that's, and I believe it's a free update for those that have the game. So enjoy. Next up, not so good news. Skyrim Anniversary Edition is now available on Nintendo Switch for $70. I'm 70 whole dollars for this game. Or if you already own Skyrim, the Switch version of Skyrim, it is a $20 upgrade. Which, mind you, Skyrim for Switch was $50. I do have Skyrim on Switch. I will not be getting this. I already have it on Steam. This is absurd. I don't understand this. Yeah, outside of just some outrageous publisher developer fees going on right now. Because, oh boy, $70. That's more expensive than any other Switch games, mind you. So, yeah, it's gross. Gross. Because remember, folks, the Anniversary Edition... like, the big thing is that it just has, like, a bunch of mods bundled in, or the capacity to buy mods. And that's kind of it. You know, I don't know if it has anything that the Switch edition doesn't already have. Because remember, the Switch edition like had to do a bunch of stuff to get it to work. So like you can't necessarily do the super high res texture packs on it. So I don't know. I don't know. I threw it in there again. This is also not necessarily new news, but this is like I'm still scratching my head over this because I don't understand. if you're someone that listens to this podcast and you are actually going to buy it at the full price, please, please write to me and tell me why. Tell me why. Because ain't nothing but a ripoff. In a somewhat tangentially similar vein, Horizon Zero Dawn. This game is from 2017, and Sony is reportedly to be working on a remake of it, which will include graphical enhancements, accessibility features, and quality of life improvements present in its sequel, Forbidden West. Why is this not just going to be a patch? Right? Like, or an update. Like, a free update to everybody that bought the game. It's going to be a remake that will be sold at, that will likely be sold at full price. Again, if you're going to do a remake, do it of an old title. Not one that's within the same console generation. It'd be like if Nintendo was like, we're going to remake Breath of the Wild. It's like, why? Why? The game still feels brand new. Like you just released it on PC. Why do a remake now? No, 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 don't do it. Don't do it. But then of course, you know, you take a look at like a lot of their franchises and what ones aren't remakes. God of War. Again, also weird. Just why? Why do this? Especially like for graphical enhancements and accessibility and features, those two should be in a free update, like to the existing game. Don't, because you know Sony's going to trot this out as reasons to buy a new version at full price. No. Folks, you should never gate accessibility features. Like if you have the capacity to patch an existing title and patch those features into an existing title, you should not. It is morally wrong. Okay. Now I don't normally take a position of something being objectively, but it is morally wrong to put those features into a paid remake when you can patch it for free. Like when you can put out a free update to an existing game. Graphical enhancements, whatever. Accessibility features, no. Because that means that you're then just penalizing people who would benefit from those features. So. Okay. Now for perhaps the spiciest bit of news. And this is going to take a little bit of explaining. So maybe not so quick fire, but Bayonetta 3, there is an ongoing controversy. And the game's not out yet. There's already an ongoing controversy. So Bayonetta 3 is obviously the third installment of the Bayonetta series, going to release on Nintendo Switch. It is by Platinum Games, who's the developer, who used to be, I don't know if they've always been third party, and they just, like, Bayonetta used to be published by Sega and is now published by Nintendo. Bayonetta did not sell well. And for whatever reason, Nintendo was like, hey, we'll take it and make it an exclusive. It's such a weird move. But basically, earlier this week, the former voice actress of the main character, Bayonetta, Helena Taylor, basically took to social media and lambasted the company and said you should boycott and told consumers you should boycott this game. You know, they offered me, you know, $4,000 to do all of the voice work for the game. You know, and went on a big tirade for it, which that's low. That's not a lot of money. So people were rightfully upset. Yesterday, I believe it was, October 18th, Jason Schreier of Bloomberg, widely renowned video game journalist, and has access to some very high quality sources, and generally, almost 100% of the time when he reports on stuff, like, he's done due diligence and like sources are vetted and everything, even though he may not be able to name them. Like the stuff he reports on is generally taken at face value of like, yeah, this stuff's true. Seems to be a little more complicated than that situation where she was, in fact, according to documentation, that is not public, but was shown to Jason for this article, by sources at or involved with the negotiating, that she was in fact offered, instead of $4,000 for the entire project, $3,000 to $4,000 per session, for like about 5 sessions. And they and their claim was that she countered with a demand for 6 figures, due to the quote unquote popularity of the series, and how much money it pulls in. Platinum, again, according to this documentation, rejected that, and so they couldn't make an agreement happen. They then offered a cameo where it would have been a single session for $4,000. That was not accepted, and so turned away. And the role then went to veteran voice actor Jennifer Hale, known for Mass Effect, and several other sort of big roles. She got pulled into it for this controversy because people were coming after her. So essentially, big old mess. And it sounds like Helena Taylor probably putting herself in some hot water. Maybe seen as to whether this affects her negatively, because companies may not wish to do business with her after this, like regardless of the outcome. So yeah, it is quite the spicy controversy. The article that Jason Schreier wrote is up on Bloomberg. I believe you have to have a subscription to read it. But he also gives like a quick breakdown of things on Twitter, on his Twitter account. So, and I gave a very basic rundown of what's going on. So in a nutshell, voice actor that's been with the series since the first game comes out saying they got lowballed really badly. Like laughably low, you know, company turns around and is able to provide documentation to reporters saying, no, that was not the case at all. And in fact, well above industry standards for union contracts. So that's where it is. it's a mess. So, goes to show, social media is terrible. The end. Go. No, everything's messy. Nothing is ever clean and simple. Aside from, I mean, honestly, the whole Activision Blizzard lawsuit thing, like, is kind of a rare instance of, oh no, this is just, you know, this is just bad. Like, it's not complicated at all, which is, it shows how bad that whole situation was. So that's what's currently going on with Bayonetta. So whether that affects your decision or not, that's up to you. I mean, I can say Bayonetta is not necessarily a franchise I was super interested in anyway. So this doesn't really affect my decision whether or not to buy it. I will admit that I had taken, excuse me, Taylor's comments and tirade at face value when perhaps I should have been a little skeptical, or at least waited to see, if there were facts coming out regarding it. But yeah, it's a mess. So here's hoping, at the very least. I mean, the truth is probably somewhere in between the two of them, potentially. But that this controversy does not make things worse for voice actors, who kind of, they kind of have it tough already. They don't need things to be made tougher by, folks who may very well, be actively harming their situation. So, all right. So that is our quick fire news. Let's talk about some 1D&D and all that playtest stuff. And like, what is 1D&D? All right, so 1D&D, at least according to Wizards of the Coast, here's what it is and here's what it isn't. It is, as of right now, an ongoing playtest. So for folks who were around during the transition from 4th edition to 5th edition, there was a playtest for 5th edition called D&D Next. This is kind of in that same vein of, I mean, it's been 7 years? Like, 5th edition's been around for 7 years, I believe. Maybe longer, maybe 8 years. And so it's kind of at the point where, the rule set is kind of matured. And this is kind of about the point when, Dungeons and Dragons kind of gets to a point where it's, well, maybe it's time to take a look at these rules and are there things that we need to tighten up? Are there things that we need to revise and this and that? So that's kind of what this is. It's taking a look at the rules and are there ways to better clarify them? Are there rules that don't work as they currently stand? And how do we fix them? Or how do we make slight tweaks to the game? To make it better, but also still making it backwards compatible with 5th edition. These are stated goals. Now, whether the execution is there or not, there is no consensus across the board from the audience, it seems. There are people who are saying 1D&D is too different and there's no way it could be backwards compatible with 5e, and there are people who are saying this is just 5e. Why are we even doing this? So yeah. Ultimately, I think what this ends up being is, and how this should be taken, is sort of like what a lot of the alternative class features were in Tasha's, where it was basically errata or errata, erratata. Substantive enough that you just put out a big old section to it, or like you put out a book for it. as opposed to like burying it in just like a PDF document that chances are a lot of folks like don't end up seeing, you know, or that just gets updated automatically on D&D Beyond. I also don't know how optional a bunch of these rules will be. I mean, it's, you know, you could just say, yeah, we're not using one D&D and we're just going to continue playing 5e, you know? So to get into that, so is this sixth edition is a question. Wizard says no. Wizard says going forward, we're not doing editions. Now that we're, granted, we're still fairly early in this playtest, we may get further down and they may say like, oh, by the way, this is sixth edition. or this is, or, you know, sort of, cause like third edition had 3.5, fourth edition had, essentials, 4E essentials, I think it was, which was basically 4.5. This might be 5.5, you know, but Wizards has, you know, I'm just basing it on what they're saying, has stated that they're looking at a future of not doing additions and just doing updates. Which I think is interesting. This kind of coincides with perhaps a shift in their leadership where folks coming in, although, you know, they certainly may have played D&D before, but like they're coming from, video game software development companies, as opposed to like tabletop RPG publishing or book publishing, which is interesting. Just in a very sort of business outlook kind of way. One D&D also is very clearly going to coincide with a lot of more digital tool sets. So looking at like further integrating D&D Beyond, Wizards also unveiled a whole virtual tabletop piece of software that they've been working on. I can't remember if it's been in-house or... if it's, or who the developer is, it is almost universally, people are going, yeah, this is a way to monetize, you know, microtransactions for outfits for minis and things like that. Very skeptical, of the model, also because it's Wizards. So there's that. So a further embracing of digital tool sets with D&D, as well as kind of taking a look at a lot of the base rules of the game, you know, and looking at ways of how can we rework things? How can we rewrite things to make things clearer? For me personally, I like this. I do not like the giant prose paragraphs to explain class features that in effect could be boiled down to like one or two sentences with maybe like some bullet points. I much prefer that for when you are talking about game rules. And unfortunately, D&D is so big. Like it's such a big umbrella that, it doesn't matter what goal they try and pursue with like refining rules, is it's going to upset a whole bunch of the player base. Because I'm sure there's probably a large contingent of people that prefer reading through rules as if it was like a story, you know, and enjoy sort of the sort of prose-like manner that 5th edition rules are currently written in. I can't stand it. You know, for me, and I know this is a hot take, but peak D&D game design was 4th edition. And in how you present efficiency of translating what the rules do and what they're about. You know, and I think getting away from that just means you're wasting page space. So... I know that's a hot take, but what they're doing is they're kind of going back to that a little bit, actually. So, you know, for example, of like how a rogue sneak attack works, instead of having that big long paragraph, It's now saying, like, here's what happens. Here are the conditions that need to be met for this to happen. And then they do like a bulleted list of the conditions. I like that it's a lot cleaner. And I think it allows, and like, here's the thing. Even if it functions exactly the same, which it doesn't, it's a little bit different. But if you were to have an ability that functions exactly the same, but is broken out like that to, number one, break up the page space so that it's not just a wall of text. That's great. You know, that certainly helps out people who, you know, maybe don't do well with reading large blocks of text and need stuff to be broken up into smaller chunks. For whatever reason, you know, I don't know if that necessarily counts as an accessibility feature. Maybe it does. I certainly know it helps me, you know, and I think it makes it clearer and better to, and easier to understand, for anybody. And so that, I think, making the game easier to understand is, that's just a win, right? Because it is often still the case where people are getting into D&D by watching other people play it or experiencing other people play it. Whether that's people that know how to play are teaching you directly by letting you join a group, or they're watching actual plays and watching like videos on how to explain things, as opposed to sitting down with the rule book and reading it. If it is easier for people to learn how to play a game by watching somebody else and absorbing those rules over the course of like several hours, as opposed to being able to like open up your book and read it and then know how to play, I think that's a problem, right? That's a problem with your game's design. In that the rules are too arcane then. And really, like, there's a lot of D&D that should be easy to understand, because it all boils down to you roll a d20, you add some modifiers, and you're trying to hit a target number. Like, all the other stuff is like modules. Like, you know, you could play a d20 game that does not do hit points or anything like that. Like, all of the combat stuff in D&D could just be built, tacked on as admittedly for the genre, a big part of it. But ultimately, like, there are a bunch of smaller indie games that, like, the whole thing is based around just like rolling a die and hitting a target number. And like, there's no other rules to it. You know, and the rules and the stuff that's tacked on is more narrative. And I think the way it's written right now is, you know, D&D just, Wizards tries to put so much effort into like making the book fun to read, by providing like literary examples. I get like the whole intro section to each class of like a little story. I don't know. Like, instead of, I don't know, or just the way each ability is written, like, there's got to be better ways of writing it so that it's just clearer, more concise. You know, I don't necessarily like spending, you know, 30 words to say something that takes like 2 words. But again, ultimately, you know, 4th edition is my favorite D&D edition, where most of it wasn't in paragraphs. It was like a template, but it was very technical. So that turned a lot of people off. But for me, it was just a more efficient way of giving out that information. And I think it's different for DMs, but when like trying to prep a game, like, you want concise blocks of information so that you can fit it on a card so that you pull it up, you know, when you're running a game. So that way you don't have to like go look up a 2-page spread of how a monster works And instead you can write everything you need on like a little index card. So anyway, so the playtest right now, there are two playtest documents. One includes Origins, which covers background, lineage, and language. And the other one is Expert Classes. Both documents have feats, and some rules and rules changes. All in all, there's some stuff I really like. And there's some stuff that I think is questionable. So the expert classes are defined as, although they can have elements of other classes in them. So like they talked about experts, warriors, I think, I don't know if they called them like divine spellcasters or leaders or whatever. But basically then like divine casters and arcane casters. And so basically like what defines that role? So like warriors were basically people who main purpose is fighting and like fighting without magic. Divine spellcasters is you cast divine magic. Arcane spellcasters is you cast arcane magic. Experts is skill use, and doing stuff with skills and utility. So these are defined and, you know, they can incorporate other aspects. So for example, rangers are defined as an expert class. Rogues, bards, artificers, all defined as expert classes. And in doing this, a couple of sort of tweaks, mostly doing updates that like Tasha's put into the classes. So like ranger was the biggest one. Basically, if you took all the optional rule sets in Tasha's, applied them to the ranger, and then made a couple tweaks here and there, that's basically what the one D&D version of the class looks like. Trying to think. So feats, everybody gets a feat at first level. Backgrounds provide that feat at first level, no longer providing a sort of social, marginally useful to, like, either completely not useful at all to, like, sometimes very useful feature. And instead, it just gives you a feat, which can be codified and studied mechanically. I'm kind of on the fence about that. I wish D&D did more roleplay stuff and more social stuff. But at the very least, you know, if you want to do that with a feat, you know, you could just build a feat and say like, hey, this is available at first level. You can get this feat for that. You know, that's kind of a very White Wolf take to it, I think. And like, yeah, these abilities are specifically like for social stuff. So like you can take them if you want, but you know, that all depends on how your game works. Some feats are reprinted from the player's handbook and got some tweaks to it. And some were, you know, made better or worse. Or tweaked. I actually don't think any of the feats got worse. I think some of them may just not have gotten better. Like, they might still not be great to take. And then fourth level feats, which basically have to wait until fourth level to take, show up in the expert document. Though a lot of those are really intriguing and interesting. So definitely interested in doing those. Other things, big changes, no spontaneous casting. So bards and rangers move to preparing spells. I'd be really interested to trying to playtest that to see how that feels. And obviously that changes how like magical secrets work. And so the document like kind of goes over that. Some spells got changes. You know, trying to make inspiration a more of a thing. I think that's a good goal. One thing that we don't see with the new backgrounds are ideals, traits, bonds, and flaws. I think that's a big mistake. I think that is a system that Wizards should have done more with, instead of just like using it as a way to give out inspiration, like have it tie to abilities or like have it matter more. You know, in fact, like structure the ideals in such a way that like the ideal matters a lot more, and have that replace alignment, because alignment is a bad mechanic. I said what I said. You know, and just make them relevant, make them matter, you know. And when you're able to make them matter in gameplay, then give benefits to it. Or, you know, or consequences, you know, one way or another. One of the other things that they do in the expert classes document is they also codify some new actions. So, and I actually like this. There's a lot of people that don't like this, but I do like D&D leaning in on these are actions that you can take. You know, and because obviously you can take an action where you just improvise something, like that's fine. Like, and that's always going to happen. But like these are by actually codifying them as actions, now Wizards can play, like it gives them more room to play around with it in a design space that will look clean. So like having a search action, or having a study action, or having a influence action. And an influence action is just like you try and influence an NPC. And everybody was losing their minds over this being printed in, like, how dare you? And like, how is this? This doesn't work and everything. Nobody knew, apparently, that those rules were just straight lifted from the 5th edition Dungeon Master's Guide. Like, they weren't even changed. So it's like, that's already in the game. They're just taking it and putting it at the forefront. You know, and obviously, you know, that's a baseline. You know, and it's meant to be adjusted. Like, it's a dial for you to adjust. You know? But then there's some things where, like, hide was changed. Like, the hide action was changed so that instead of trying to beat an enemy's, you know, passive perception, which is how it currently works, instead it's like a set number. So like if you beat a 15 on your check result, like you're hidden, and then people have to try and find you. And it's like, you know, I don't know. Like I do think that there's problems with how hiding works in 5th edition currently. Especially given that, like there are mechanical advantages to being hidden. So, you know, I get that, like, it's to simulate, like, you don't actually know if you're hidden or not. But like, then it becomes a whole, like, well, I'm in this position and I'm going to roll, you know, I'm going to roll dice to do a thing, you know, and then you have to wait for it, like, it, there's a bit of a disconnect with that, like, like enforces a bit of metagaming to be, you know, like, let's say that you're hidden and you're trying to get the drop on somebody, right? So then you roll to attack. Normally you'd have advantage, but you're assuming that you're hidden if you're going to roll for it, if you're going to roll with advantage, because you don't know. And so you have to ask the deal, like, am I rolling this with advantage? And then if they say no, like, you as the player know, oh, well, I'm not hidden then. So the thing is, like, I don't know if I like the rolling against a set number, but I also don't know how to solve that other problem. And I think at least this way it does solve that problem, is, like, you are hidden and, you know, somebody's got to find you. Um, Yeah, I don't know. I think it ends up penalizing lower level characters by like, yeah, I'm a rogue and I can't hide ever. Like, 'cause that's not going to feel great. Whereas like they might be able to if they were just rolling against the passive perception of other folks, you know, enemies and creatures and monsters and stuff like that. Whereas like hitting a 15 constantly, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I think for people who play, you know, a more realistic type game, that's going to be a problem. You know, I think if you're going to lean into D&D being a game, and treating it as such, I don't think it'll be as much of a problem then. Because then like then hidden just becomes sort of like a status condition, and it's like, all right, I'm going to try and see if I can apply status, you know, hidden status to myself. Okay, I'm hidden. And then it becomes a little more video gamey. I personally don't mind that, but I don't know. Like I'm on the fence. Like I think it's a better way of letting the player know, like I'm hidden, then I don't need to, like I know I'm hidden or not. But at the same time, I also don't like if somebody finds you, you also, I don't know, like if the DM does it in secret, you still don't know. So I don't know. It's a mess. Other things include like, you know, they're toying around with like how critical hits work, critical successes, getting inspiration for rolling a natural 20 or rolling a natural one. You know, all sorts of stuff like that. Changing up like jumping mechanics and things. So yeah, I think the interesting thing I will like to see is how they intend to sort of reconcile when certain rules conflict with the existing ones, whether it's done as modules. Like if it ends up just being like, here's the fifth edition here's the one D&D big book of modules, and these are intended, you can use them as you see fit with your game. So maybe the only thing that your group wants is the one D&D version of the Ranger. You know, maybe they don't want anything else, they just want that. Or maybe they like the idea of you get a feat at first level, but they want to have it be any feat. I wouldn't recommend that. So yeah. But we'll see. I think they are doing surveys. I believe the survey for the Origins document is closed at this point. I could be wrong on that. The expert one, I don't know. I think it might be open at this point. But also, make sure you read through that stuff pretty carefully because I didn't on my first glance, and I thought the bard was terrible, and then I had to go back a couple times and actually read it, and I went, oh, it's not terrible at all, and in fact, like it might even be a little bit better now. So yeah, if you're gonna read through those documents, just make sure to read through them very carefully. Don't just skim them. They are available for D&D Beyond members. So if you have a D&D Beyond account, you can access them through there, and get the PDFs straight through links there. They are not integrated into the D&D Beyond framework at this time. So if you're going to use that stuff to play test, you're going to have to do it the old-fashioned way. So just keep that in mind. All right. So yeah, but ultimately at this point, not sixth edition. Granted, we'll see, but yeah. I mean, so far, overall, I'm pretty pleased with what we've been seeing. I kind of just, you know, I really want to see what they do with monster design and encounter building. If they somehow make 5th edition monsters work with 4th edition encounter building, you know, and then just like introduce new ways to build monsters, like in a new framework for building monsters that mirrors like what 4th edition did. There we go. I'm in heaven. Because from a DM standpoint, 4th edition was the superior edition for building encounters and building monsters, because it had a framework and it told you how to do it, and not just like, well, you know, it's kind of loosey-goosey with challenge rating, and like, you know, it kind of might work, but you got to play test it to really see if you've got the right challenge rating, because, you know, and here's the other, like, challenge rating doesn't work. It just doesn't. And the fact that, you know, there are things that, like, can dramatically change a monster's challenge rating that are outside of, like, the normal calculations. That, I don't know. It's non-intuitive, right? Where, like, a CR7 monster, it's like, what does that mean? How does that translate to the level of the party? Right? Which is, in 4th edition, we had, like, you would have a level 7 standard monster. And what that meant was that it was an appropriate challenge for a single 7th level character. And if you had an elite, that was equal to 2 characters. And if you had a solo, that was equal to 5 characters. And then if you had minions, 4 of them to 1 character of equivalent level. And if you wanted to up the difficulty a bit, you could just up the level of the encounter. You could just throw a bunch of level 8 monsters at them, or level 9 monsters at them. And then your XP budget, and that was an easy way to figure out your XP budget. So, yeah. I can only hope. Help me, 4th edition D&D, you're my only hope. So that is one D&D. As there are, as new playtest documents come out, I'll talk about them. But yeah, and then I think it happened before the break, or it might have happened during the break, actually. Spelljammer came out, you know, big controversy with the Hadozi, a lot of racist imagery and a sort of racial uplift backstory that was added in after the fact, basically huge blowback, from the community, and Wizards removed it from future printings and from D&D Beyond. Still not quite sure. No word on, you know, I think they said there was going to be an internal investigation as to how it happened. I have not heard anything about that internal investigation, but considering that there were only 3 authors for that particular book, and 2 of them being Chris Perkins and Jeremy Crawford, and the 3rd one no longer works at Wizards of the Coast, I don't think anything will come of it, personally. So, yeah. So just it kind of keeping an eye on Wizards and being like, yeah, I haven't forgotten, so let's see what's going on with 1D&D and keeping you honest. So, all right. I'm going to wrap that up with 1D&D. I don't want to ramble too much. And I got to do quest log and talk about what's been, why did I take 3 months off? So let's get into it. All right, so Questlog is normally, I talk about like what I worked on for the past, like what sort of geeky stuff did I do on my to-do list for last week, and what sort of geeky stuff did I put on my check on my to-do list for this upcoming week. This is going to be a little different. What's happened since July, when I did my last podcast episode? So we moved, we bought a new house. We sold our old house. In doing so, you know, obviously getting a whole new space set up, getting used to that, getting everything unloaded. But also, I have had some, it's unclear what it is, but it is basically chronic pain in my upper back. And it's a little unclear. I haven't been getting a lot of help from health professionals to diagnose what this is. It's not clear if it's a disc problem. It's not clear if it's a muscle problem or connective tissue or what. But it has made it difficult for me to, on top of everything else that's going on, to do things like do this podcast and do the comic and all that stuff. So that's why it kind of took a backseat until like everything. So why content took a backseat until kind of the dust had settled and everything else. So although that is still going on, is getting into a routine and trying to figure out what I can do on my end while I wait for doctors to stop dicking around with everything. I apologize. You know, I try and keep family friendly, but sorry, goofing around, you know, because it takes me like 2.5 months to get an appointment for this. So, and you know, for chronic pain, that's kind of unacceptable. So, so that's basically what's been happening. Right. Not really much of else. I mean, you know, as far as games go, like not a whole lot of depth and breadth of games being played. We have done a couple sessions of D&D during that time period. We did play test Stewpot. Which is sort of an indie game in which you are retired adventurers who are transitioning to a domestic life and running a tavern. It was fun, but I think it was not the typical role-playing game that I tend to enjoy. You know, like it was fun for a one-shot, but like it's not something that I'd be like, oh yeah, like let's play Stewpot again. Or on an extended basis. You know, I think for me, I think I need more crunch. Cause it's kind of a sort of a, it's a very rules light sort of, here's a prompt and it's very much, just sort of improv a scene type thing. So, and like, if you're into that sort of stuff, like, it's great, and it was fun, so, like, I'm sure you'd love it. I don't know. For me, I like to have a bit more game in my role-playing game. So, that's just my own personal preference. But I think it is good at what it sets out to do. You know, I think I was just hoping for a little bit more something, you know, a little bit more something like Dragon Stew, or I don't know, or like Rod Reel and Fist, where it has, you know, all mechanics for, you know, basically a fishing combat system. So yeah, I've been getting into my time at Portia or Portia. I don't know how it's pronounced. You know, just in yet another sort of cozy farming life sim game. And I got a whole sort of retro console station set up in my basement now. For playing basically NES through Wii U games on one TV. So yeah, next step will be trying to find all the NES games in my Game Boy Micro. But, so that's kind of what's been happening since July. And that's why, unfortunately, content hasn't been produced. I do appreciate people's support, especially, you know, patrons that have still been supporting through that time. Cause I do have it set up as a monthly thing and not as a per post type thing. But I appreciate the support. I'm not going to apologize for it because it was necessary. and ultimately, you know, my goal is to try and browbeat my doctors into actually doing something about my back so that I can get back to having a normal life. And so that I can get back to doing the things I enjoy and not having to, like, try and work around it. So, which means for the time being, this might still be the only stream for a while. Like, it might not be until November where we start to get maybe the comic stream or Stardew Sundays back. Also, because we've got swim lessons that are happening on Saturday mornings with the kiddo. So that kind of doesn't work with that time frame for the comic stream. But, you know, we'll try and figure something out. I'll try and get back into doing comics. Like, I haven't done any artwork in like these 3 months, because it's just like I just haven't been feeling it. It's hard when you have pain and chronic, like, and it's especially when it's like, if you have pain in a place where, like, you don't have to, like, you can stabilize it and you don't have to move it, it's not necessarily as bad. Because, like, you can, like, kind of mitigate that. When it is your upper back, and particularly your ribs kind of are moving all the time. And not just, like, with gross motor movement, but just, like, breathing. Pain becomes exhausting. So, yeah. That's, you know, just something that I got to figure out, and hopefully, get some answers. Cause I've already had to do this with my lower back and sciatica and got nowhere with it. So, and I'm not taking it for this problem. So, right. So that means, what are we doing for this week? So, goal for this week. I still want to get the 8-Bit Adventures Chapter 1 book finished, I guess, by the end of November. Because that, like, that to me is, like, that's when fall ends. Like, none of this, you know, like, because the first day of winter is in December. December's a winter month. Just, like, first day of summer is in June. June's a summer month for me. You know, first day of fall is in September. September is a fall month. Like, none of this. Oh, well, it's still summer when it's like September 15th. Like, it's a fall month. So anyway, so for me, you know, self-imposed deadline of November 30th is when I want to have that book be available to put in people's hands. So all that's left really are to, like, fill out some pages with artwork. And, like, that's it. So it's just, like, other artwork to throw in the book. So basically getting that stuff together and maybe working on some new artwork to put in that book. And that's it. Like, that's what I need to do. So, Yeah, and then maybe, you know, maybe have somebody, you know, if I have anybody in the audience listening to this who would be interested, you know, and I do have some money, I can pay you for your time, to, you know, not necessarily be a full-on editor, but just like, I guess, be an editor for like the other parts of the book. You know, and just see like, oh, does this work? Like, are there pages that are missing that I should have, sort of a thing. You know, or even not like if it's out of just like an advisory type thing. Let me know. I've never self-published a book before, particularly a comic book. So, unfortunately, the person I knew who had the most experience with this has passed away. I could use some help, you know, and I'm not going to be afraid to ask for help anymore. So, but yeah, so that's the goal, is to either get existing artwork that I have already done to put into pages for that book, or try and figure out a new piece of artwork to start and get in there. So, that is the goal. So we'll see if I can get it done. All right. Well, that's it, everyone, for this episode, for episode 273. Thank you all so much for joining me. If you would like to see more of my content, go and check out the website at 8-bitadventures.com. I had a chat link. It's not working. All right. Well, so 8-bitadventures.com. I also have a Patreon if you'd like to help support that content. Oh, you know what? I bet Nightbot probably got turned off. Is Nightbot in the chat? No. That's probably why. Oh, boy. Okay. But patreon.com/8bitadventures is where you can go support. But the comic, the shows, all that stuff. I might be reworking how Patreon works and like the tiers and stuff. I'm not going to do it in such a way that it kicks anybody out. Rest assured, it might just be looking at like what tiers aren't being used, and kind of readjusting that stuff. Big shout out and thank you to all my current patrons. Like, I know I thank them early for their continued support through all this stuff that's going on, but again, thank you all. Like, it really means a lot to me. And one day, hopefully, we'll get there so that, you know, at the very least, it'll self-fund, like, all the hosting costs for these various things, if not be able to do more stuff. So, we do have a Discord server. Chat links aren't working, but there is, it will be in the show notes for audio listeners. There is also a tile on the Twitch channel page that can take you to the Discord invite link. It's a small server. We don't have any problems. So, you know, and it's not one where you're inundated with activity that you can't constantly keep up with. So there you go. If you just want to come have a place to hang out, occasionally throw a little chat message in there, or to voice chat, during game nights or whatever. So, opening theme is one up by Professor Shy Guy. You can find his work over at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. The theme that we have used for 273 episodes is One Up, an instrumental version of One Up. So, he does some great stuff. So go check out Professor Shy Guy, show him some support. And, again, big thanks to him for allowing us to use that. that is going to wrap things up for this episode. So once again, thank you all for joining me. Thank you for listening. Please consider giving this a 5-star review on, Apple Podcasts, I guess. Is that where you rate things? I don't know anymore. As always, have fun, happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.